Hello, and welcome to the Zenith Bank PLC Full Year 2019 Investor and Analyst Conference Call. Throughout the call, all participants will be in listen-only mode, and afterwards, there will be a question and answer session. Just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. Today, I'm pleased to present Mr. Ebenezer Onyeagwu, the Group CEO. Please go ahead with your meeting.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's my pleasure to welcome you to this conference call, and I'd like to introduce our team. I have with me on this call Mr. Dennis Olisah, Executive Director, Dr. Tope Fashoranti, Executive Director, Mr. Henry Oro, Executive Director, Mr. Felix Egbon, our Chief Risk Officer, Mukhtar Adam Doctor, the CFO of the group, and we have Taye Ayedebu, our Investor Relations Manager. It is my pleasure once again to welcome you to this call. Before we go into the numbers and the details and highlights of our performance, I'd like to take us through some of the key points that underpin the year 2019 and also the issues that are already beginning to trend and determine the direction of business in 2020. Global economic growth has remained very sluggish and muted, and the issue of the coronavirus is also beginning to create serious impediment for business across the globe. Throughout year 2019, growth has been sluggish, both in the local economy and in the global space. However, in Nigeria, we recorded a real GDP growth of 2.55% for Q4 2019, which is the highest we've ever recorded since the recession of 2016. The oil sector expanded by 6.36% year-on-year, contributing 7.32% to total real GDP in Q4, while the non-oil sector grew by 2.26%, and this is driven largely by activities in mainly information and communication, agric, finance, and insurance services, as well as manufacturing. Headline inflation closed as at January at 12.13%, rising from 11.85% as at December 2019. It's also important to say that food inflation rose by 19 basis points to print at 14.67% year-on-year as the effect of border closure continued to weigh on food prices. Core inflation in itself advanced by 34 basis points to have a year-on-year closure at 9.33%. Our foreign reserve closed the year at $38.6 billion, down from $40.5 billion recorded as at end of October 2019. However, our exchange rate remained relatively stable throughout 2019, with NAFEX rate for December 2019 closing at 363.7 against 362.6 closure for 2018. At the same vein, NIFEX closed 2019 at 359.7 against 2018 closure of 358.8. In the regulatory environment, we've noticed that it's been very busy and active, and the direction of travel has led to a drop in yield in all asset classes, as well as a bifurcation of trading in risk-free assets. There is also a move to encourage investors to take a longer-term perspective in the country with the introduction of the five-year OTC futures. In August 2019, the Central Bank introduced the loan-to-deposit ratio regime, and at that time, banks were expected to maintain a minimum loan-to-deposit ratio of 60% at the review period of end of September 2019. Subsequently, this was increased to 65%, and this loan-to-deposit ratio regime has continued to be applied by the Central Bank. Additionally, the CBN came up with the review of the guide to bank charges. The key point of the review is a reduction in fees and commission on electronic products and in some of the key retail products. There is also the move by the central bank to introduce cashless policy, which will become a bank-wide policy from end of March 2020. It is expected that this will create a bigger boost for growth in retail business and the adoption of various electronic payment platforms in the country. We've also seen the emergence of the new Finance Act, which took effect from January 2020. And part of the key points of the new Finance Act is that we've seen that minimum tax on dividend payments is now moving from minimum tax on dividend payment to minimum tax of 0.5 of total revenue. It is expected that for the banking industry, this will bring about a reduction in effective interest rates. For Zenith Bank in year 2019, we were able to achieve a loan growth of 22% and a deposit growth of 15%. Our performance has been largely inspired in terms of the top line by a remarkable growth in our retail and digital business initiatives, which resulted in increases in fees and commission on retail and electronic products from 20 billion in 2018 to 42 billion in 2019, which translates to a 108% growth. Our non-interest income also came in strong with a 29% growth as 2019 figures stood at 232 billion against 2018 figure of 178.9 billion. We have also remained very effective as we continue to rein in the key levers of costs. We've seen our cost-to-income ratio drop from 49.3% to 48.8%. Cost of funds also dropped from 3.1% to 3%, while cost of risk remained moderately stable at 1.1%. So I would like to hand over to our CFO, Ms. Dr. Mukhtar Adam, to take us through the other key highlights of the performance for 2019. Mukhtar.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on this call. So in the year 2019, we have seen a growth in our top line by 5%. And then our PBT has grown also by 5% from 231.7 billion to 243.3 billion. Likewise, our PAT has also grown from 193 billion in 2018 to 209 billion in 2019, representing 8% growth. The growth in PBT is largely attributable to our growth in top line and cost containment during the period. The growth in top line, largely driven by the growth in fees and commission income, centered around the growth we have recorded consistently on fees on electronic products, which grew from 20.4 billion in 2018 to 42.5 billion, representing 108% growth. Due to the low yielding environment, we have seen interest income dropped by 6%, and as a bank, we responded to the drop by repositioning our funding sources, which resulted in 2.4% drop in our cost of funds that closed at 3% from 3.1%. Impairment has also increased by 5.7 billion between 2018 and 2019, largely due to the growth in our loan book. Remember that our loan book grew significantly during the period. This drove our cost of risk to 1.07% from 0.9% in 2018. We have seen other operating expenses drop by 7% due to our continuous work on our cost optimization and efficiency within the period. Cost to income ratio has moderated to 48.8%. from 49.3%, which is also a very good progress. From all these, ROE remained flat. ROA increased to 3.4% from 3.35%, We also have earnings per share growing by 8% from 6.15% and from 6.15 to 6.65% in 2019. So overall, in terms of our performance, we have seen growth or strength in the top line, revenue line, while we have seen some progress in containment of costs, which has improved our profitability during the period. Then for balance sheet, our balance sheet has grown within the 2019 financial year. Deposit grew by 15% year on year when compared to 2018. Our loan book grew by 22% as a result of disbursement of new loans in different sectors of the economy during the period. The growth in the loan book, however, did not lead in deterioration in our NPL. Our NPL ratio declined by 16% from 4.98% in 2018 to 4.3% in 2019. We also closed the year with loan-to-deposit ratio of 68.7% for the bank and 57.7% for the group. So from the balance sheet perspective, we can also see the key drivers of a business of a bank, which is the loan, the deposit, are also showing significant signs of growth. So we can take this and then we'll go through the questions and answers to address anything that we have not highlighted on. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mukhtar. So the floor is now open for us to take questions.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypads. You may press 02 at any time to cancel. And our first question comes from the line of Tolu Alamutu of Telema. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Oh, great. Good afternoon, and thanks for hosting the call. I have a few questions, please. The first is on your Eurobond, which only has around 107 million outstanding. Would you consider buying all of that back, or would you maybe consider even issuing more Eurobonds based on what you're seeing in terms of dollar demand for loans? The second question is about regulation and the CBN penalty for the loan-to-deposit ratio shortfall. It looks like the penalty was 79 billion at the end of last year. Can you give us some detail on whether or not that amount has changed? And also related to that, it looks like you're guiding to loan growth of just 2% for this year. Can you maybe give us some more detail on why you expect such low loan growth after the performance last year? The third question is about your NPLs. It looks like there was a lot of movement in the manufacturing sector and in communications. Within manufacturing, NPLs went down and communications went up. Can you maybe tell us more about the companies and the exposures there? And finally, what oil price are you using on average in your lending to that sector at the moment? As in, what are the assumptions currently used? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Tolu. For the Eurobond, if you recall, as at end of April, we had a redemption of the bond that matured. That was half a billion. And in the course of the year, precisely in August, we did a tender offer and bought back about 400 million out of the 500 million dollars we issued. So far, we don't think it's economical for us to launch another tender offer to buy back the balance. So we'll see that balance up to maturity. New issues will be determined by what opportunities we see in the market. If there is any opportunity and we think the pricing is right, we'll approach the market. But so far, we've figured that where we are comfortable in terms of our funding and the related costs. For regulation, LDR shortfall, I'm going to leave Mukhtar to take that question and also take the guidance on the loan growth.
Okay, thank you. The LDR shortfall, you know, it's not a straight loan-to-deposit computation. So we have it's largely loan-to-funding. Other sources of funding are included. So what we have as of December is what has been taken. The CBN has guided that the next review period for the LDR is March this year. So you can see that our loan book has grown significantly, and we continue to pursue that. We are working in such a way that we are not going to have heavy heat on the LDR, CRR on LDR. So that is what we are doing on that. We don't expect it to grow on that basis. But what has been debited in December is still there. And as we disburse more loans, the CBN review what we are doing, and sometimes they are able to refund some of the CRR. So we'll be working towards that and see how much we can get in terms of refund. If you look at the loan growth guide that we have given, 22% growth in our loan book within this year is significant. And then you also have to note that some of the loans that are already, we've already disbursed, a lot of them will be due for pay down during this year. So you have a lot of repayments during this year, and then you recycle them. Look at our deposit growth too. We have guided deposit growth of around 2%. So the two of them have to go together. If we have big opportunities to disburse more loans, of course, we will fund it by also going out to grow our deposits. So for now, that is the guide. The two of them are going to go together. You mentioned about MPL for movement between manufacturing and communication.
Yes, exactly. So I think it's in one of the slides in the presentation, it shows that manufacturing fell by quite a lot in terms of the amount of MPLs it accounts for, and I think communication went up.
Communication went up because we have one major name in the industry that we had made full provision for, and then we have classified it as MPL appropriately. It's a single major name in the communication industry. So that has been classified. Then in the manufacturing, we now have opened up, we have expanded our definition of what constitutes manufacturing. We have growth in key distributors of major manufacturing firms that we used to report as part of manufacturing. But that portfolio itself is growing. So we have opened it up to report it separately. So the MPL around that has also left the manufacturing. That's why you see a manufacturing MPL dropping.
Okay, let me further say that. For the LDR, what you have there is the discretion as to what to refund to banks is that of the central bank. If you look at it in terms of achievement cumulatively, one would have expected that we should have a refund of not less than 70 billion of the LDR, because in December, we achieved 65%. Well, however, we are operating in such a manner that we think at the minimum we will achieve the LDR of 65%, at least to avoid the obvious consequence of having the CRR debit being levied on us. Loan growth is a reflection of what we see in the macro space. You can't grow beyond the economy in which you are operating. And beyond our economy globally, the issue of the coronavirus is taking a major toll on business. China today remains the global hub for logistics and supply chain. If China is under attack, it's going to have serious impact and consequences on the global business. So we have to be conservative and cautious as we begin to project. It's a guidance. And when things begin to unfold in the course of the year and we see that there is a reason for us to review it up, well, why not we'll do so? For now, it is just based on what we can see in our perception of what the growth prospect will be in the environment. And like Mukhtar mentioned for the manufacturer, it's just a simple reclassification. If you notice the slide, you see that while manufacturing decline, SMEs and retail increase. It's just a simple reclassification because now we are, retail is now a major focus for us. So we are keeping retail and SME on a different segment and bucket so that we can have proper understanding and appreciation of impact on business in terms of contribution to top line, contribution in terms of loan, contribution and impact in terms of NPL.
That's very helpful. Thank you. Just the final question on the oil price that you now assume in your lending to that sector.
Okay, oil price in terms of lending to the sector. First is that we haven't seen incremental growth in terms of our oil sector exposure. What we have, there are legacy transactions that we have. And what guides us beyond the oil price, the most important thing for us is that whoever the exposures we have are all properly hedged. So much more important to us than the oil price is the price deck at which we go into the hedge. So what we have tried to do is to have some form of a put option that protects the downside risk in the event that you have a downward spiral movement in the price of crude, and also giving some kind of comfort and assurance and benefit to the obligor should price begin to move upward. So we now... We sell a put and subsequently buy a call at a higher rate so that way we are able to create a margin that keeps the obligor well protected, protect against downside risk, create comfort and assurance in sharing in the event that you have an upward movement or rally in the price of crude. So that's pretty much the focus for us. So whatever direction the price of food goes, we want to be sure that we're adequately protected and everything is properly reinforced.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Dinesh Ramshad of Templeton. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, Greg. Can you hear me? Hello? Can you
hear me? Yes, go ahead.
Okay, we seem to have lost the line from Dinesh Ramshad, so we'll go to our next question from the line of Gloria Fedagve of CSO. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the presentation. Just a few questions from me. Considering all the adjustments to fees coming in this year, can you give... an insight as to how much you see fees, especially fees and electronic products, dropping this year vis-a-vis 2019? And then can you tell us exactly what your loan-to-funding ratio is as of full year 2019? And also like to have an idea of how much average yield has dropped in your portfolio, and also how much funding costs has dropped, and what are those numbers looking like currently? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. So Tokpe will take on the question on the adjustment and expectation on the fees and commissions.
Okay, thank you. Let me say that we set out in 2018 to build a retail organization. And you can see the result of that from the growth in, even from the contribution of the retail segment to the gross revenue, which increased significantly from 6.7 to about 13%. And the GMD also referred to the growth in electronic income by 108%. How did we do this? We set out to build a retail organization and came out with products that can excite the market. We leveraged on our corporate relationships. We came up with advanced analytics. We also started what we call digital customer onboarding. All these strategies will continue. We're going to build on them. So we don't expect our income from electronic products to drop at all. Rather, we expect it to increase further. In addition, we also have a retail field force who are driving activation across the country. So these products, we are very certain that we'll see further growth in our income from electronic products. Thank you.
Okay, further to that, I think the other point to mention is that we are simply accelerated in terms of our initiative in the retail and digital space. We believe that it's a big environment. The space is big. The potential to grow is much, it's enormous. And bearing in mind our very strong IT and digital capability, we are introducing products. We are coming up with products and services that are aligned with the lifestyle. So you are going to, what you'll be seeing in the market will be different products and services that are aligned with different segments of the market. So we are making our reach total so that we have a comprehensive grip in the market. So the simple way for us is just grow volume. Once we have the volume, we'll deal with the drop in terms of absolute fees and commissions.
Okay.
On LDR, the CFO will take that, Mukhtar.
I will take that.
Okay.
We achieved a ratio of 34.68% for loan to funding ratio at 31st of December.
Sorry, did you say 64.6?
Yeah. Okay. So we had a very small shortfall for which we paid. That is a small amount, too. That was quarantined.
Okay, and this is for the bank?
Oh, yes. The LDR is only for the bank. It's not a group issue. You talked about, you wanted to know the average yield to what extent has it dropped. Well,
yes.
If you look at our return, that's an interest margin. It dropped from 8.9 to 8.2%. That tells the story. Conversely, cost of fund too hasn't really moved in the same direction because, as it were, savings has become a significant portion of our deposit. Savings rate is still at 4.03%. With the very significant amount of savings we have, you still see that our cost of fund only moderated slightly from 3.1 to 3%. That's essentially what it is.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Onome Bifo of Money Africa. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello. Good afternoon. I have one question. I'd just like to know what your strategy will be going forward in the light of the drop in TB's interest at the moment, as from last year. So we know that quite a significant chunk of your income came from trading. So I'd just like to know, do you expect rates to remain depressed as they are at the moment? And if so, what's your strategy to, mitigate this? Thank you.
Okay, Dennis will take the question.
Thank you very much. We as a bank, we have a very, very strong treasury team who are not only resilient, but understand what the market actually presents at any point in time. We quite agree with you that rates are trending downwards, but be that as it may, there are still a lot of opportunities. And for our investors, please be rest assured that we still have investments in treasury bills that are still in the works. They are not yet matured. So we expect to get to derive yields for some time to come from those ones. In addition to that, the interbank market is still very strong. We'll continue to make our presence felt, both as a placer of funds as well as a taker of funds whenever it becomes necessary. Truth of the matter is that in treasury management, we are strong and we'll continue to remain strong. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Nalue Bloro of CHD. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is Manray from Trapper Hill. Ebenezer and team, great job. So there's some chatter in the market around a potential acquisition you're looking to make. My question is, what's that trigger? What are you looking, what will be the driver, if at all you're making a transaction? What are you looking for? Is it retail? Is it customers? Because I see your shareholders' funds at almost 940 billion. and you get any bigger, I'm trying to see, you know, what is driving that potential trend, if at all it's true. Then also speaking to your shareholders fund, I mean, is there ever a time we might have a big dividend payout? You've been, you know, it's the levels, I think, I think shareholders can probably, you know, push for more and ask for more. So I'm trying to see, is there ever a time where, you know, you will pay, you know, higher than you've been paying historically? And I think that number has been around, you know, in the 40% range. That's my question.
Okay, thank you very much. I think the first thing to note is that our growth aspiration hasn't changed. We've always maintained that we are a growth organization. We are desirous of growing. And we have also maintained that our growth strategy still remains organic. We'll continue to grow organic. And however, if we find anything interesting and disciplined in the market, we can consider some corporate action. So if you are asking for the trigger, it has to be disciplined. It has to bring a lot of value to us. It has to be consistent with our culture, with our style, our values. We will not do any M&A just because of the fun of it. It's not for the managerial hubris. If we are going to do it, it's going to be for strategic reasons. So it has to, and that strategic reason has to be extremely, extremely compelling. That's the answer to that. Then dividend payout. Of course, we'll continue to reward our shareholders with very outstanding dividend payment. We also believe that it's important for us to continue to beef up our war chest in terms of our shareholders' fund, so that we'll be in a position to take on any opportunities and respond to shocks and, you know, just be nimble in the market to deal with any emerging opportunities.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Olivier Michael of Standard Pension. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for taking my question. I have a couple of questions. One is, can you just expand further on your digital acquisition strategy, and then if there are milestones or targets you are looking to achieve over the next 3 to 5 years? And my second question is around your NPL. I couldn't recompute the NPL ratio on my own looking at your financial statements. So maybe you could point me in the right direction of how you computed your 4.3 figure, because what I computed was slightly higher than that. My last question is around your downstream sector. So I observed that there was some growth in the percentage exposure to the downstream sector. I just wanted to get more color around why you are increasing exposure to that particular sector. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Digital acquisition strategy. I'm sure you don't expect me to begin to display and communicate my digital acquisition strategy. All we can tell you is that we will be accelerating. We have the right competencies. We are building the right capabilities. We are making the right investments. We are getting the right traction. And we have every inspiration to accelerate. So just be rest assured, we can begin to share and display what the strategies are. On downstream sector, what you have there that will appear as growth are simply cashback transactions. They are strictly cashback transactions, apart from the legacy transaction against which we have promissory notes duly issued by the DMO to cover them. So we don't have what we call any elevation of the risk exposure on our downstream. Calculation of NPL, the CFO will take you through that.
Okay. Go to page 81 of our financial statement, I mean the full financial statement. You will see our loan by sector, the various sectors, the gross loans, and the NPL for each of the sectors. If you add the total NPL, you're going to have gross NPL of 105 billion. And then the gross loan is 2.462 billion. So it's 2.462 trillion. So if you do the math, you arrive at 4.2.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
I'll send that.
question comes from the line of Adeleke Emmanuel of Arm Securities. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
All right. Thanks for taking my questions. I have a couple of questions. The first one is I'd like to know how comfortable the bank is with the growing NPL in the consumer credit sector. And the second one is how much of your CRR are you seeking to give out as part of the DCRR scheme to the manufacturing and real sector? Then thirdly, there's talks of CBN increasing the capital base for banks. How do you see that happening? And if that should happen, how do you think it's going to affect your dividend payments? Then the fourth question is, can you give me an idea of your derivative book size as it's now? And lastly, also can you also highlight what sectors the loans you provided, you made provisions for over 2019. Can you just give me an highlight of the sector, major sectors? Yeah, I think that'll be all for now.
Okay, thank you very much. You are asking about, first, the comfort we have on our commercial and SME loans. What we see there?
Consumer credit.
What you see there is a reclassification. If you look at the figure before, that's 2018, you will realize that when you are looking at the NPL for manufacturing, the figure for 2018 is much higher than what you have 2019. And 2019, if you also notice, the figure for 2018 for SME and SME and general commerce, you have consumer credit, you have 0.89%, whereas under manufacturing, you had 31.05%. Now we take you back to 2019. You see manufacturing coming down to 5%, and you now see consumer credit increasing to 11.99%. What we have done is to reclassify the SMEs that we put under manufacturing, because we now see SMEs and retail as a new segment that we want to measure effectiveness of our performance. So everything about commerce and SME, we now appraise on a standalone bucket, both in terms of loan side, in terms of earnings, in terms of fees, and also in terms of NPL. So it's not a deterioration. Otherwise, if you also look at the absolute NPL, 2018, we closed with 100.5 billion. 2019, what you have is 105.8 billion. So that explains what you have as NPL. So if you're asking for comfort, yes, we are certainly comfortable, because when we take a look at the retail loan we've granted in the course of 2019, and we look at maybe default or repayment that are behind, if we are to appraise it proportionately, the NPL we have in retail is less than 0.00%. I mean, it's our first year. Expectedly, one will expect that to arise. On DCRR loan for CRR, it is not within our purview. Whatever request we have, we send to CBN. It's at the discretion of CBN to give the approval in terms of the request they receive from banks. So we've made our request to CBN, and the approvals are coming, and as they come, we take them on. Then CBN increasing the capital base, we believe that we have a robust capital. And part of the things we see us... the question before now was about dividend payout. It was about our very strong capital base. We don't think any increase in minimum capital requirement or upward review, we don't think will be threatened. We don't anticipate that to be a problem to us. What we'll continue to do is to reinforce and strengthen our capital at all times. The other question is the derivative book. And the size?
Okay.
Bukta?
Okay. So on the size of our derivative book, if you look at page 145 of our financial statement, the full financial statement, we've shown the nominal amount of our forward and swap contract to be 729 billion. The nominal amount of our futures contract is 319 billion. So that gives you 1 trillion in terms of naira. That's the size of our derivative book, and the details are also in that notes to the financial statements. Page 145 of the financial statements.
Okay, thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Kevin Harding of Investec. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, guys. Thanks so much for taking our call today and the presentation. I just have two questions. One is, how should we think about your coverage levels for stage 1, 2, and 3 loans through the cycle? I guess with the implementation of IFRS 9, it's changed sort of quarter on quarter, and I'm just trying to get a sense of how you guys see it from a long-term perspective. And then in terms of you guiding towards deposit growth of around 2%. I'm just trying to get a better understanding in terms of how you are going to grow your retail transactional business, given the fact that there won't be such a aggressive growth in transactional deposits. And then lastly, you're guiding towards an effective tax rate of 12%. If you could just walk me through how you get to that, given that last year you guided towards 15 and you achieved largely the same this year, where you get suddenly that sort of about 3% benefit in the effective tax rate. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. The question on the retail growth. If you take a look at our balance sheet, you see how robust it is. It's just a question of reclassification of asset classes. Right now, when we look at what we have in the risk-free instrument, as at the end of the financial year, we close on risk-free instrument with about 1.5 trillion. So in the event that we are unable to put them in such risk-free assets to earn effectively as we earned before, the option for us will be to deploy that deposit to drive the retail business. And we don't think the growth in retail business is going to suck so much of that. Yes, growth in retail business may be steady, but in terms of you still need to do, the mileage is long for you to be able to have something that is quite substantial. So we believe that it's part of our treasury management skills. Like Dennis mentioned earlier, if it comes to treasury management, we have a very profound and remarkable skills, and the team is quite on top of the game, and they understand the treasury play. And so the guidance we've given as 2% growth on deposit, we believe is sufficient so far based on the sentiments in the market. If things change and things improve, this time last year, nobody knew that there was going to be an LDR issue. Nobody knew that we were going to be facing the level of discretionary CRR implementation. We never anticipated there would be increase in CRR from 22.5 to 27.5. Things change. So when things change, you know, right now we are talking about coronavirus. Nobody anticipated it. So all we continue to do is we are a nimble organization. We are resilient. We are adaptive. So whatever the situation is, we will come back to the drawing table, do our modeling, and be able to revise our guidance. So, Mukhtar, you will take on the tax rate and the state rate coverage.
Okay, let me start with the effective tax rate of 12%. In the introduction, the MD mentioned that the new Finance Act has given some kind of respite to corporate organizations like banks in terms of the basis of paying tax. Currently, we pay tax based on our dividend amount, 30% of our dividend. But with the provisions of the new Finance Act, we are going to pay minimum tax, which is going to be 0.5% of our revenue. If you look at that, that gives you some kind of tax savings. And that would that is why the effective tax rate that we have guided is lower than what we have done so far. On the coverage for stage 1, 2, 3, now stage 3 loans are loans once you put a loan in the stage 3 bucket. The whole amount is in stage 3, but how much impairment charge you have to hold on it for direct charge to P&L and the eventual coverage you have is a function of your collateral. and the value of the collateral. As it is, if you look at our stage three loans, you see that the effective coverage on them is around 60-65%. So which means the valuation of the collateral gives you a cover of around 40%. The reason is that when you are doing valuation for the stage three loans, you will have to expect some kind of long time to sell or realize the collateral because of the legal system. So you will discount that over a period of time. And we also have a guideline for haircuts. There's a central bank guideline that guides you on the haircuts to take on different collateral. So that affects how much collateral you are going to use as a mitigant for stage three loans. Stage two loans have a relatively moderate effective impairment rate, which is between 25 to 30%. Okay, sometimes it falls. It goes up to maybe 20%, depending on what is in that bucket. Then stage one loan averages 1%. It's sometimes lower than 1%. So in terms of going forward, how we expect various loans to migrate, you have CBN guidelines how you can move a loan from stage three to stage one. Even if a loan begins to perform, you have to have 3 months and probation period to watch the loan performing. But you cannot move it until it has done that 3 months in a particular stage, then you can move it. So those are the guidelines that would that guide us. So if you want to know, unless you have a major event on a major customer, but not performing before it can move significantly, or you have a cash recovery of a particular loan, then it will move. So that's the guidance. I hope it's clear.
Yep, thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Olawemi Smith of FBN Quest Merchant Bank. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, good afternoon. So I just wanted to speak with regards to your capital adequacy ratio. I can see that in 2018 it was 25, 2019 it was 22, and then you're projected for 2020 is 20. So I wanted to find out if it goes below 20 or if it's at 20, is there any concerns for the bank if it falls below 20? Thank you.
Okay. Significantly, the numbers we are posting as CAR is obviously affected by the growth in the loan book in this period. We have grown by about 400 to 450 billion naira in this short period. So, and as you well know, that is a significant increase in our weighted assets, and it's the number we're posting, in my opinion, is robust given the kind of growth that we have seen. We don't have any concerns as to how these numbers will run within a year, because we think that between 20 and 60%, which is our regulatory number that we're supposed to post, we have sufficient buffer to be able to withstand an additional growth. And given the guidance we are giving today, a drop of 2% will be very significant for a bank like Zenith Bank. So even though we have a regulatory position at 16, we still think that roughly we won't go below 18 or 19 in the course of the year. So we think we'll be able to sustain this.
Okay, so even if, CBN should increase, what you call it, loan-to-deposit ratio, you don't foresee any issue with your capital adequacy ratio?
Well, on the issue of CBN increasing the loan-to-deposit ratio, I think we should also bear in mind that so many issues come into play. You have to think of implication for your liquidity ratio. So it's not like a straight traffic. For Zenith, we've always operated by maintaining very strong and healthy buffers above all the prudential, minimum prudential guidance. So as a systemically important bank, our expected minimum is 16%. At 22% we're closing, we still have ample room for growth. The buffer is there for us to grow. And we don't think we are getting to that point where we say we'll be hard-pressed for capital. We don't think so. So we'll continue to maintain a healthy ratio, and we don't think there's any threat to capital for us. Well.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Dinesh Ramshad of Templeton. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, G'day. Can you hear me?
We can hear
Hello.
You.
Hi there, great. Thanks very much for having this call. I've got two questions. Regards the trading gains, are you able to sort of tell us from where those trading gains are coming from? So is it from the swap portfolio, the treasury management, or the derivatives portfolio? That's my first question. And then the second question just relates to the cost of funds. I think you referred earlier the reason for why cost of funds actually hasn't gone down, because you are sort of pushing more, you are sort of gaining more savings savings accounts where you have to pay a minimum of 4%. Given the fact that you are sitting very low on the loan to funding ratio, and there's a shortfall within the requirement is still quite big. Would it make sense to try and sort of work off some of these savings accounts where they're actually not necessary? In that way, you'd also sort of be doing the double job of actually getting closer to the loan-to-funding requirement. Thank you.
Okay. The CFO will take on the question on the breakdown of our trading gains.
Okay. So if you look at our trading gains, the derivative loss in the whole trading gain is that the derivative book gave us a loss of 7.4 billion. So if you look at page 139 of our financial statements, note 11, you will see the breakdown. Treasury bills trading. So our trading activities on treasury bills is the major contributor to our trading gains, which contributed 114 billion of the 117 billion trading gain. Then you have trading on bonds, various bonds of various sovereigns, also contributing 10.9 billion. So that's the major driver of our trading gain is actually the trading on treasury bills and government bonds, with our derivative book coming in to actually reduce the trading gain.
And let me also point out that the treasury team is quite remarkable in terms of understanding and trading on the volatilities and the spikes in the market, unless there are no volatilities. So we believe that, yes, yield may have compressed, but our trading activities will not by any means go down. We will intensify our trading activities.
Okay.
The question on savings account? Cost of funds. Yes, Mokhtar, take it.
Okay. So if you look at the cost of funds, you need to look at what is happening in the market now. Savings account now has a fixed amount of interest that you have to pay on it. The other classes of deposits do not necessarily have a fixed amount. The rate has gone down, but the going down of the cost has happened in the last quarter of the financial year. So if you average everything within the financial year, you should not expect a very low cost of funds. We expect to see low cost of funds in this 2020 financial year, because we started the year with some high rates in the industry. In half year, the rate was not very low again. So it's in the Q4 that you saw rates going down significantly. But savings accounts cannot go down. For now, it's still a fixed amount for the savings. Then you also have to know that our cost of funds that you're looking is the group cost of funds. We also have some high rates in other jurisdictions that we have operations. So our operations in Ghana, the rates are also very volatile there, and their deposit book is very large. So you have some high cost of funds coming from there. Yeah, but the key point is the drop in cost of funds will be very pronounced in 2020 financial year.
Yeah, savings account is regulated, like Mukhtar mentioned. And the current regulation is that it's set up 1/3 of the MPR. So until that is changed, we are stuck with it.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Fora Abimbola of FBM Quest. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I just have just one question, actually. Unlike some of your peers, you still report your NPLs on a prudential basis, and on an IFRS 9 basis, your NPLs appear to be higher than the 4.3% that you've reported. When do you think you would start reporting this on an IFRS 9 basis?
Okay, thank you very much. This is a very interesting question. I don't think there is anything under IFRS 9 that is called NPL. You will never find it in any IFRS book, and there's nowhere you'll find it. So when are we going to start reporting like that? There's no need for us to do that. The most important thing for you to ask is, have we reported all our Stage 3 loans in our financial statements? Yes. The Stage 3 loans that is driven by IFRS 9 principle is properly disclosed in our financial statements. What is called NPL, that is based on the prudential guidelines issued by Central Bank, okay, and they continue to give guidelines on what to call NPL. We have also disclosed that in the financial statements. So I think it is transparent enough. You have the two. So as an analyst, you can work with any of the two depending on what you want to analyze. So our responsibility is to disclose everything to our readers, our shareholders, which we have done on the financial statements. The rules guiding IFRS is totally different from the prudential guideline. So, and there is nothing that has come to say, let us harmonize them. Until you do that, you are using different principles and different rules, and it gives a very wrong message. So in our financial statements, we have our Stage 3 loans, and we have our NPL. Thank you.
Thanks for clearing that up. Thanks.
Our next question comes from the line of Todi Solanki of RenCap. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yeah, hi. Hi, everyone. This is Todi Solanki from RenCap. I have a couple of questions. My first question is, if you can just talk a bit more about how you approached new credit creation in Q4, you know, just given the poor macro backdrop, you know, wouldn't these be customers that you ordinarily wouldn't have lent to? I'm trying to understand what exactly you're lending to. And can also explain how this differs across corporate, SMEs, and retail. My second question is with respect to the tenure of new loans that were created in 2019. The third one for now would be with respect to your ability to access the OMO market, just considering that the central bank has recently been indicating its preference not to see banks actively investing within the OMO market. So let's address those for now, and I'll come back with my few remaining questions.
Okay, thank you very much. On the question on new credit for Q4, I think it's not enough to say new credit for Q4. If you ask us about our credit, I mean the loan book, it's not about the Q4 thing. It's about our credit practice. We'll continue to emphasize the fact that there is LDR is not a call for recklessness. Zenith will never be reckless when it comes to loans. We'll continue to do loans that are disciplined, loans where we can see ourselves in and out. We will not be stampeded to book loan because there is a regulation that will hit us by a sanction of having our liquidity being constrained or impaired. No. Our ideology for loan remains choosing and picking. We will not destroy value because of LDR. We will continue to work to sustain value. So whatever the loan book, the quality remains a central focus for us. We will not in any way compromise it. Tenor of the loan, they vary. It depends. It depends on what transaction we funded. If it's a loan coming through the CBN, discounted credit reserve lending window, you are going to find longer term loans that stretch as far as 5 years, 7 years, 8 years, as the case may be. If they are regular working capital facility, trade finance related, you are going to find, you know, short tenured facility of less than 1 year. Of course, not forgetting the fact that most corporates and also indigenous customers have their regular working capital facilities. OMO market, CBN did not shut down the window and say permanently. We are not aware of the regulation that CBN says you can approach OMO market. That we haven't heard about that. After all, we still have we still have OMO bills in the market.
Renewable.
So we are. We believe volume may not be as much as what you want to be, but we don't think there is any closure for banks in accessing the OMO market.
Okay. Thank you for those questions. But if I can also just talk to, just sticking with the question about loans, what is your sense about, you know, how that is split between what is working capital versus long-term in nature? And just on balance, I know earlier on when we were speaking about, you know, your 2% growth for 2020, your thinking also is that a portion of that loan book would mature during the year. You know, so if you can just talk about what's the split of the loan growth last year between what's working capital and long-term in nature. My second question is with respect to non-interest revenue growth. What numbers have you baked into your 2020 estimates? I don't see this in your slides. Then also, if you can give me a number, perhaps this is for Mukhtar, with respect to your effective cash reserve ratio as of today. Then also, you spoke quite a bit about digital lending products you've introduced over the past year. Can you give us some examples? You know, what are some of the ones you've noticed have gained the most traction with your clients, you know, since you started on this new initiative? Then my last two questions. So the first one is with respect to saving rates. There were some indications in the press that at last week's Bankers Committee meeting, you know, the central bank indicated a desire for interest rates on savings accounts to be reduced to 1%. Is this the case? You know, what exactly is going on this front? And finally, this is also for Mukhtar. Just with respect to FX swaps, can you tell me, where do I find the number for FX swaps with the central bank, and where do you record the related income from these, and how much was this in 2019? You know, I'm not sure I can find exactly where it is in your financials. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll take on first the issue on savings. I think you appreciate the fact that we are a regulated business. Being a regulated business, I don't draw my regulation from what is reported in the newspaper, but what is communicated by the central bank. So it's therefore difficult for me to begin to rely and depend on a speculation from a newspaper report and begin to implement that as a regulation. We will wait until CBN does any announcement. What we know is that right now savings is regulated and the regulation is one-third of MPR and it hasn't changed. And CBN doesn't change policy on the pages of newspapers. They communicate to all the banks. The breakdown of our loan, I don't think we need to go granular, but if you want, you can look at the slide on our presentation and also look at the financials to get a sense of the breakdown of our loan in terms of advances in current account, in terms of long-term loans. Maybe, Mukhtar, you want to...
Okay. All right. If you want to look at the financials, I need to get a page for you. But if you go to the maturity profile in our financial statement, you will see the disclosure breakdown of the loans that are maturing within 1 year and those that are maturing after 1 year. That will give you a sense of how we are doing in terms of the loans. So loans and advances, if you go to page 111 of our financial statement, you will see the maturity profile of the loans and advances. I think that would be very, very helpful. Those that are maturing within 1 month, 1 to 3 months, 3 to 6 months, and so on and so forth, that's going to be a good guide. And then you are asking about our effective CRR. Again, I would want to take you to the disclosures in the financial statement that... talks about our cash and balances with central bank and various
No.
So, if you go to page 142 of our financial statement, you will see mandatory reserve deposit with central bank, okay, as of December is 680 billion, and then you will see special cash reserve central bank is 80 billion, right? So those are the two that make up our CRR at that particular point, okay? And then we've given the breakdown of what they are and how they were computed in the notes beneath that. And then you are asking about our FX swap. Our FX swap with central bank, you won't see any specific line called FX swap with central bank. We have FX, we have swaps and other transactions with different counterparties, of which central bank is one. And our financial statement cannot list all the counterparties for the FX swap. But the income on FX swap, as I explained earlier, the swap transactions, the derivative book itself, you had a loss of like 7 billion. But the trading treasury bills and trading bonds are the one that contributed significantly to the trading income. Thank you.
Okay, so Mukhtar, so if I'm just getting it correctly, so the trading, what you call treasury bill trading income, that would be income from T-bills that related, that related to swaps with the central bank, partly. Would that be correct?
Yeah, partly, yeah, sure.
Part of it.
I mean, if you do swap, you swap currency, a counterparty can give you Naira, you give the counterparty dollar. Counterparty can give you treasury bills, you give the counterparty dollar. So that treasury bills, if you hold it as trading, and you trade on it, you take advantage of the volatilities in the market, that gives you income. Yeah, sure, it's part of it.
Okay, but if you held the T-bill to maturity, the income on those treasury bills, where would you record it?
If you hold the treasury bills to maturity, that is a different thing. The income goes to interest and similar income. That's
okay.
A different thing. Yeah, sure.
Okay. My last question, which wasn't answered, was what level of NIR growth have you baked into your 2020 estimates? And if you can also talk about some examples of digital products that you've launched, which you saw gain significant traction over the last year.
Digital product that we've launched, I think I'll leave TalkBack to talk about that. But the most important thing you'll notice is we built serious efficiency into the digital platform where we are connected. And we are quite heavy when it comes to aggregation and settlement on various platforms. And that is driving massively some reasonable level of income. So I think it's about extending our footprint largely. And Zenith being an aspirational brand in the minds of the people, what we've also seen is that our foray into the retail and digital space is very well received by the market. So those who thought that, well, you needed to get to a certain level of income and earning or pecking order in the society before you can have a Zenith account, now have that assurance that, yes, you can open account with Zenith with zero balance. And it cuts across the different platforms. We have like almost close to 8 to 10 channels through who you can open account. So I'll leave TalkBack to take you through some of them.
Yeah, thank you. In addition to what the GMD has said, we have various digital channels that we launched our products from the ATM to the web to the mobile, USSD, and so on. So beyond the branch bank, we have gone digital for customer onboarding. And then products have been designed, at the various customer segments. For example, look at students. We have products for them. The affluent, we have prestige products for them. Elderly, women, these are all products we've designed to meet their specific needs. And that's part of our strategy, to drive more of these products across these channels. In addition, customer onboarding is a very key one. And not just onboarding, we're also looking at the adoption of our cards as these accounts are open. We're also onboarding them on our mobile applications. We're also looking at partnerships with various fintechs and telcos for us to, improve our digital and our retail journey. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all.
just to remind everyone, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. You can cancel by pressing 02. And our next question comes from the line of Moira Oni of SBG Securities. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for the presentation. I have a few questions. The first is on your customer growth. I just want to understand what your current active customer base is right now. So if you look at your 9.6 million customers, how many of them are active, and then how do you define active customers? And then also what kind of growth expectations you expect for that? And I think secondly, on your e-banking revenues, I also want to understand if it's purely retail, so purely USSD and all those retail type of income, or is there some element of transactional products or some corporate banking transactions driving that line as well? And then also wanted to get a sense of your view on Amcon and its shelf life, and if you see this levy going off anytime soon.
Okay,
those
thank
are my
you.
Questions.
Okay, Sokba will take you through the customer growth and e-banking revenue.
Okay, on the customer growth, in 2018, our customer base grew from about 7.83 million to 9.575 million. And like we said, this is coming basically from our retail journey and the drive that we put into our retail. I think we have earlier mentioned about the impact of the retail segment on the gross revenue, growing from about 6.9 to 13%. And we expect to see this grow further in 2020. Thank you.
Amcon Levy, Mukta.
Okay, you mentioned Amcon shelf life. Well, if you ask me as a bank that I'm paying the premium, if they are going to end Amcon today, I'm happy because that saves me a lot of cost. But can I say whether it will terminate at the end of the 10 years or not? I cannot say now. So what are we supposed to do? We plan prudently with the fact that for now it is there. The law says it is going to terminate at so and so date. So I plan with what is on ground for now as the discussion continues. So that's why in our guidance for 2020, we have still factored in Amcon charge, right, until the termination of the whole Amcon arrangement. If it is renewed, we brace it for it. If it is not, we'll move on with that. So we can't say it will be renewed or not. But in our 2020 guidance, we have factored that in. Does it answer your question?
Yes, it does. Well, can you clarify? So you didn't answer the question on active customers. So just wanted to get a sense of how many of those 9.5 plus million customers are active. And then also, e-banking revenues, if they're all purely retail related, or if there's some element of corporate and transactional revenues coming into that line as well.
Okay. Number of customers.
So 40 billion. Hello?
The number of customers we have moving from 7.8 million in 2018 to 9.5 million in 2019 are all active customers. In terms of revenue
so
from
there's no
e-banking,
sense of demand in the 9.6?
No. There's no. What we have here represents active customers. So dormant accounts are not included in this list. So again, for the e-banking revenue, what we have are fees accruing from the various e-channels that we have. We don't have a mixture of corporate banking revenue, maybe fees, facility fees and commission coming on that line. These are essentially fees accruing from various electronic channels.
So to help you understand that better, if you go to note 9, page 139, we have specifically stated as MDC, credit-related fee is there. Okay? And then we have a line, fees on electronic product. It is there, specific. So that's what it represents.
No, sir, I get that. I get that. But you know also with your corporate customers, you do have e-channels for them as well. And I suppose there will be fees related to transactions on those platforms. So I also wanted to understand if the 40-plus billion e-banking revenues is purely retail or if it's a mix of both retail and corporate.
What you'll be seeing, if you are looking at it, will probably be the NIP. NIP fee is very negligible when you put it in the pool. It's not a significant pool accruing from there. I think right now it's been reduced to 10 naira. So if you are looking at 10 naira for a transaction, you can imagine the number of, it's not based on volume of transaction, but it's based on number. And what you see in the retail space is that if you have a convenient platform, you create higher velocity, you create, by reason of the velocity, you are creating volume. I give you an instance. Somebody, the retail customer will want to buy airtime 200 naira today. And he will, after buying airtime 200, he will probably need to go and shop and go and buy grocery. It could be 2,000. So you find out that on the average, a retail customer could use his card on any of your platform almost five times in a day. So almost five times, if he's using it on the POS terminal, you have fees accruing. If he's using it on the ATM, you have fees accruing. He's buying that time, you have. So these are the facts around that, that the most important thing for us is maintain very remarkable channel. If you go to the ATM, you have the issue of on us and not on us. We remain steady positive because we end up having ATMs of other banks being used on our Zenith ATM because our ATMs are, the uptime in our ATM is almost like what you call 98%. The rate at which we deal with issues of chargeback and transaction failure is impeccable. Therefore, you see customers coming and having repeat transaction. And for every ATM card of any other bank use on my platform, I earn a fee. So if I have cash steadily on my ATM, customers, we have a situation where it's dealing with the capacity we have at each of our ATM, so ATM location. So that's essentially what you see as the key drivers of the revenue from electronic fees and commission.
Thank you.
Everyone, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypads now. And we have no more questions on the line, so if I stand corrected, we do have a question from Todi Solanke of RenCap. Please go ahead. Your line is now open. Hey, Todi Solanke, you may go ahead and ask your question.
Oh, hi. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Oh, sorry, I was on mute. My question is, for the line called Treasury Bills Trading Income under Trading Gains, what portion of this 114 billion is related to swaps?
Mukta, you want to take that?
Okay. I'm not able to tell you it. You know, your trading book has everything that you designate as trading. It's an accounting decision and classification that you make at the time that you get an instrument. We can have an exchange of treasury bills with a counterparty and decide to hold it to maturity. Everything that is sitting in the treasury bills trading, depending on how we read the market, we can decide to hold everything to maturity. It's a business model strategy. If you feel that the market is too volatile on the downside, trading will cost you a lot of loss. You hold it to maturity solely for interest and principal. You'll be collecting your interest and principal, amortized cost, and then you report it as interest income. But if you feel that you can play the market, you on your own, you can buy some treasury bills, put it as trading, and then you trade on it and make gains. So It has nothing to do with how much is coming from CBN swap or not CBN swap. It's a portfolio strategy that you say we need to put X amount in our trading and we need to put Y amount in our held to maturity. Okay, so it has nothing to do with specific derivative or swaps.
Okay, maybe you can help me better. You know, what I'm really just trying to understand at the end of the day is, so overall, you made about 500 billion in revenues, so that is across interest and non-interest. What portion of this revenue number would you say is related to swap transactions? That's really what I'm trying to figure out. If you can help me with that, then we're on the same page.
I think Mukta has sufficiently answered this question. We can't begin to disaggregate our various income lines going too granular. You have the trading income, 114. And Mukta has given a very elaborate illustration of how that portfolio or bucket came about. So begin to now say, check what portion of it relates to your half a billion, that's the swap. We don't think we have that information, and we don't think we need to go to that extent. So just take a look at that. The most important thing is that our counterparties are various. They are various. Even in this year, we have counterparties who've done some trades, some transactions with some foreign banks. So it's about the clout and the reach we have in the market. It's what you are looking for in the market. These are areas where we look out for deliberate opportunities on how to consummate some of these activities. So it's something that is there, the treasury management team, they understand it, they go for it. So it's not exclusive to one counterparty, they are various. And like he also mentioned, it depends on what side it is. And we do it across different currencies. It could be a swap, we giving you dollar, you giving us naira, it could be vice versa. And in what currency? It depends on what we have at the moment. So that is what it is. And for as long as that opportunity is there, we'll continue to sharpen our skills to ensure we optimize the benefits that we can get from it.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we have no further questions on the line. So if I could hand back to our speaker for closing comments.
Okay, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. All we can assure you is that Zenith remains very resilient, very creative. We'll remain very dynamic in responding to the trends in the market. We'll continue to read the market. We'll continue to align our business strategies in line with the reforms in government. We expect that the reforms in agri will continue. Therefore, agri will continue to be a major sector that we'll look into. And currently, we are beginning to see and hear conversations around infrastructure development. We believe it's a collective responsibility of all to ensure that we are waking the macros in Nigeria. So we are already discussing at the level of the Bankers Committee on how we can develop a framework that will enable us assist in infrastructural development, whether it's going to come by way of a PPP or by way of a leverage backed by a tax credit structure, we'll look into that. But certainly, Zenith will be taking active part in that. And then our risk appetite, we are not going to compromise. We'll maintain our risk acceptance criteria. Even if the LDR is increased, we will not be stampeded into booking loans simply because we want to achieve the LDR. We'll remain decent. We'll remain disciplined. And we hope to continue to extract value from our balance sheet. We believe that there's a lot more value. And even as yields are compressing, it is time for us to trust our guts, trust our instincts, and make sure that whatever opportunity and whatever new segment and niche market there is to explore, we'll explore it. We assure you that we'll do all within our powers to ensure that the result for 2020 remains very, very healthy and very, very attractive. Thank you very much. God bless you.
This now concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.